Hello and welcome to Salesforce Architecture Talk with Gaurav and Satya. This is the place for all architects, consultants, and developers in the Salesforce ecosystem.
All right. Okay, welcome everybody. We are back. This is episode 6. I can't believe it. It's episode 6. Security. What a fantastic topic this is. Unless you understand this topic on the Salesforce platform, you cannot call yourself a Salesforce expert. Security on Salesforce is very, very, very complex. I mean, security in general is a complex topic, but with Salesforce, I think security is very specific to the platform. There are certain features, even though you can apply security principles in general, there are very specific features that apply only to Salesforce, and understanding what those features are key to designing your solution onto the platform, or even for your CTA board. This is a good topic to really get your hands on and very deep understanding of the. Let's begin this. All right. If you are joining in only for this episode, my name is Satya. I am a Salesforce architect lead at Google. And I have with me my good friend Gaurav, where we are running this series of CTA episodes. Gaurav, do you quickly want to introduce yourself?
Definitely. Hello, everyone. My name is Gaurav. I am also a Salesforce CTA, ex-Salesforce, one of the architect leader. And yes, this is very, very, very important topic to touch. I think a lot of architects, a lot of consultants really struggle sometimes when they don't understand this particular topic. And this is one of the most problematic area of any implementation, because things can go very complex, things can go into very config-based solution also. So understanding this topic in detail is definitely very important. All right, let's get going. So this is a quick view of the agenda. What are we going to cover? We'll definitely touch base on high level of the solution sharing architecture. There are different platform capabilities around sharing, so we'll quickly have a little bit touch into those particular areas. And then there is a special uniqueness of sharing around the standard objects, which we will go through. And then when we talk about sharing, it is not just sharing of the internal user, but also around the community access, how the external users will get access. And then integration is also something we cannot forget, because without integration, we have never seen any implementation, right? So security plays a very strong role in that space too. So, and then we'll go through into a bit of security features and we'll wrap up with final thoughts. So I think if you are listening to this particular podcast first time or watching this particular session first time, this is very simplistic or probably easy way to understand how the CTA prep or journey would look like for the candidates. And again, this particular topic is the session 2. We're going to really solve this left side of the pyramid. We'll deep dive into the whole security architecture and go in deep there. Now let's go into the core platform architecture, which Satya will cover now.
Yes, thank you, Gaurav. Okay, so you must have seen this slide. We presented this in previous episodes. And look, this is a slide about very, very high level overview, very, very simplified overview of the Salesforce platform, right? You would see this slide being repeated in multiple talks, because this is the platform. This is all it comes back to, right? We all know that Salesforce is a trusted multi-tenant platform. Its metadata-driven architecture makes it it does today. Like everything that you create onto the platform is stored as metadata, and that is the reason why Salesforce can release so many features per release. 3 times a year, actually it's even more now, right? All the AI features coming out. So all of this is possible because of the metadata driven architecture. And we all know that the database is the shared physical database across in one pod, right? Onto the platform. But what we see when we access our Salesforce org is our objects, right? Our custom objects, our standard objects. This is a logical database. It's not actually, it doesn't map one-to-one to a physical table in the physical database onto the platform, right? The reason we are trying to explain this concept again and again is because you need to understand whenever you're designing any applications onto the platform, you have to understand the security aspects of the platform. So security wise, there are a lot of features that are baked into the platform. And we'll talk about that in today's session, but also understand that identity is also baked into the platform. Privacy is baked into the platform, so on and so forth. And all these applications that sit on top of the platform, like sales and service and Einstein analytics, these are all apps that sit on top of the platform, right? And you can build your own custom apps. You can build your own. You would have seen a lot of app exchange packages. These are all applications that are built on top of the platform, right? Experience Cloud is another one, right? We'll talk about the security features of some of these applications in a little bit more detail as well, but consider this as a Salesforce platform. These are the key features. Now, if you go to the next slide, this actually gives a little bit more. This slide is actually an expansion of the previous slide. It's trying to give you a more security related perspective of the platform. As we said, it's a multi-tenant platform. That means you will have more than one customer's data in a single pod, right? So if you look at this is again a simplified version where there are only two customers. There could be up to 20 or up to 200, up to 300 customers on a single pod, depending on whether it's a first party or third party pod, right? But there are other customers sitting on the same Salesforce pod, an instance. Again, the metadata layer is shared, right? The database is also shared, but the data that you access in your is logically separated from all the other customers, right? Security, like every org has its own security settings. Like you can have your own org-wide defaults, your own roles, your own profiles and permission sets. And this security features actually help you define who within your org gets access to what data and what features onto the platform. So it's very, very key. Another one is the identities. A lot of folks don't understand that identity is actually baked into the system. So when you log in using Salesforce username, password, or use OpenID Connect or OAuth, this is all identity features that are supported by Salesforce platform. And license management as well, right? So in a way, you can think of identity and licenses as the first defense into the platform, right? It's the first layer of defense, the first level of entry that you see. And the license actually gives you access to certain features onto the platform. Let's say, for example, if you need Experience Cloud features, you need an Experience Cloud license. You cannot get Experience Cloud features without that license. So it's kind of acts like the first level of defense when it comes to data security. And as we know that there are different apps, as we spoke about, the sales, service, community, data cloud, all these apps that sit on top of cloud. So when you look at a user from a user lens, right, like there could be every Salesforce instance at the max has some internal users, some system users, and maybe some customers as well, right? But what we're trying to indicate in this slide is that when an internal user is trying to access the system, their access obviously has to authenticate. It goes through a login layer. And then it also has to bypass the security layer that you would have implemented as part of the org. Right? And that actually determines which data they get access to. Right. Similarly for system users. System users are users who don't have UI access. They only access this platform via an API only kind of interface, right? But even for them, they need to have a profile and certain permissions to access a certain level of data, right? Customers, on the other hand, are slightly different because customers access the Salesforce instance via the Experience Cloud. And there are certain specific features that are related to Experience Cloud, which we will talk about as we go along in this talk. But understand that even customers, when they create data or when they access data, it also goes through a security layer, an identity, obviously, they need to authenticate, and then to the security layer to actually get access to the real data that is stored in the logical databases, which is our objects, and then into the physical database, which is common for all customers in a single pod.
Correct. And I think very important thing to note on this particular slide, we are trying to depict that, okay, there is no crossover of data happening between actual customer. If two customers signs up the Salesforce licenses separately, there is no data exchange or sharing happening between those particular customer. There is a clear logical segregation, as we are showing here, that one customer data is actually limited to completely that customer, and there are different ways to open up access even for that internal users. So what we are trying to also show that, okay, how Salesforce is really has built the whole sharing architecture, which is making it super secure, which is fully scalable and traceable, which are the very important aspect of any sharing requirements on the platform, that you got to figure out, okay, who is coming in at what particular time and what particular data they are viewing or updating. So there are different tools, different mechanism on the platform using which you can explore or find out and monitor. But there are a lot of different capabilities on the platform which controls the access and the sharing of these users and personas. Yeah.
Absolutely key to understand if your objects, if your records are being edited. So there are you must have seen that there are audit fields onto every record, like created and modified. Right? It's very, very important to know who actually changed the record, who is making these changes. There is field audit tracking that you can enable. All of these are key important things when it comes to security, right? Because you want to make sure that all these things are captured. You know who has changed what data elements, and so on and so forth. So very, very important that your Salesforce implementation is secure. It has to be scalable, because and Salesforce does a lot of the scalability magic for us, but it also needs to be traceable. So in my experience, in some of the implementations, I've seen some bad practices where there's sharing of users within, let's say, an organization, or we create one user and then you share passwords. And these are all very bad practices, because Salesforce at the end of the day is a SaaS platform. So if you want to use access to Salesforce, every user needs to have their own account, their own control over their authentication.
Exactly right. All right, let's jump into next part.
All right, who can tell me the first rule of Fight Club? Oh, no, not Fight Club, first rule of Salesforce sharing.
I think it's a very important aspect which everybody should think, is principle of least privilege, that you start with the minimal access, and that's where you start opening up this particular access to different persona. But how come this Fight Club analogy is working with it?
Because it's the first rule of Salesforce sharing, that, you know, so what is the idea of principle of least privilege, right? The idea of principle of least privilege is that you lock the system. You lock everything, right? Like how you have your house, you basically lock all the doors. And then you give access to data and features as required. So you lock everything first, and then you open up to specific users, to specific use cases, right? So a user onto the platform should only get access to data and features that they need to perform their job or their role while accessing the Salesforce system. Now it is very like logical thing, right? Like if I tell somebody like this is how you should define your security, everybody would agree to it. But the amount of times that I've seen Salesforce implementation violating this principle, I would say so many times, right? Like, it is not something, we don't design our systems with security first mindset, which is the key message. If there's one message you want to get out of this entire session, is security first. Because if you don't put security as your first principle, bad things happen. Bad things happen where your data may get exposed. Some mischievous people may get access to your data it may be sensitive data, and you may get exposed, you may get bad press, and you don't want that. Like, this is a very simple thing to fix. Idea is lock everything down. You start with, if you're a new implementation, lock everything down, and then understand what the requirements are for every persona, every user group that you have in your organization, and then open up. And there are multiple ways to do that using the platform, which we'll talk about in this session. By the way, what is the second rule of Salesforce sharing?
Second rule? What is the second rule?
Always follow the first rule.
All right. I think we are getting too impressed with the Fight Club movie. So that's
a good
awesome
movie. You should watch
it. It's a good movie, definitely.
Okay, so there are multiple sharing features onto the platform, right? The most important one, whenever you define and whenever you create an object, or if you're configuring a standard object, is the org-wide default. What is org-wide default? Okay, org-wide default defines the rules on that object. The always on rules is what we call it for accessing those records. So there are a bunch of settings for org-wide default onto the platform. You can keep it open, public read-write. So anybody in the system, it's internal users. It's internal versus external. There are two types of awkward defaults: internal awkward default and external awkward default. So if you keep it too open, public read write, bad practice, never do it. What that means is you are giving everybody in your org access to records on that object. As read, they can access it and they can also edit it. So this is the most open permission of awkward default that you can have on the other platform. And there are a bunch of other, like, you can keep it read only or you can keep it private. The best practice is to keep private. That is, again, principle of least privilege, locking it down private and then opening it up using a lot of bunch of features that we'll talk about. Okay, profiles and permission sets. Profile is obviously a mandatory field on the user object. It actually assigns a license. Well, you can also assign feature licenses using permission sets, but profiles and permission sets are really telling the user what they can do in the system. Like, I can create an account record, or I can view an opportunity record. I can create cases. I can delete cases. So all the CRUD activities that you want to define are defined using profiles and permission sets. And if everybody who has been working on the Salesforce platform knows that profiles and permission sets are very, very complex to manage, and they can give you a lot of permission, or they can give just the permission that you need. Role hierarchies. Role hierarchies defines a tree-based object, tree-based access to the record. So if you own a record, if I'm an owner, and let's say Gaurav is my manager or higher up in the hierarchy as defined in Salesforce org, this is where all the records I own, Gaurav automatically gets access to this record. So this is the tree-based hierarchical structure that you can set for your users into the system. One mistake that I've seen that people do onto the platform is they replicate their HR hierarchy as their role hierarchy. Mm. So in some instances, that may work, because sometimes your HR hierarchy defines who should get access to your Salesforce record. But in a lot of instances, that may or may not be the case. So whenever you're designing your Salesforce implementation, make sure that your role hierarchy aligns to the data access requirements of your solution, rather than just blindly copying your HR hierarchy as your role hierarchy.
Exactly. And I think whenever we release that, any implementation, role hierarchy, like, these are the different aspects, personas, identifying profiles, what sort of permission, how the role hierarchy will look like. These are the first questions we asked, right? And then people start thinking about role hierarchy as the organization structure, which they replicate, and then it becomes very complicated to manage. So it's definitely one aspect which needs to be thought through as the data sharing tool than creating a proper organization structure within Salesforce. Now, I think next bit is around ownership. And again, ownership is, again, it's one of the mandatory fields on the record, which can be a user, not a queue. And that drives basically that, okay, this user gets the access. And now based on the user ownership access, then you basically can have different tools, different automations baked in to open up access. There are programmatic versus configuration versus out-of-the-box rules, which really opens up the access. So that ownership really drives very key aspect. And then sharing mechanism, which we were just touching now, that there are implicit sharing and there is explicit sharing which happens, which we will cover up a little bit more in detail about them. But these, there are definitely there tools or mechanisms available on the platform to open up the access. And then what we are saying is, okay, these sharing mechanism, definitely there are exceptions around sharing rules or manual sharing or teams or territories, but there are different tools available on the platform to drive how the sharing is going to happen. And then
I feel like the implicit sharing aspect of the platform is really misunderstood, right? When we were preparing for CTA or when we were actually preparing for this domain, that's when we really understood, okay, around what is implicit sharing, and there are multiple implicit sharing mechanisms. It's key for you to understand what those are on the platform.
And I think understanding, there is a theoretical understanding. We'll cover up these bits in next slide, but there is definitely a theoretical understanding, but you need to try it out. You need to understand under the hood it, how it works. Look at exactly how the records drive the access. So, and that same goes into Apex-based sharing, which is called programmatic sharing, and then which is technically full flexible, as in Apex name in the sharing itself explained that it's controlled from Apex. You understand how the share table works, what sort of fields drive what sort of access, and then you insert or delete or modify those particular records to match the requirements in terms of, and finding exactly when you would want to do Apex with sharing versus or programmatic is very important. You really need to consider all sharing aspects of out of the box configuration, then jumping on Apex with sharing.
Yeah, that's the last resort for you. Don't jump on Apex sharing day one, because that means that you are now managing the entire security and sharing mechanism on which users get access to which record. So that should be the last resort.
Yeah. Correct. And I think now let's do a bit of deep dive into implicit and the explicit sharing. I'll be very frank, when I actually started the whole sharing domain before that, I had no clue in terms of how this all worked. And I had to really try it out, understand, touch those particular capabilities and understand exactly, oh, this is how it works. And then it actually was stamped in my head that, okay, yes, this is how it works. So implicit sharing is more or less that how the access to contacts, opportunities, and cases works based on account access. So, and that's where we are. That's what we wanted. We were discussing before that the standard objects sharing, how that actually works. This is exactly the way it happens. That if you have owner access to account, you want to give read write access to cases, contacts, opportunities. And there are different places, like when you're creating a public group, you can control how you want to really manage that. When you're creating a role hierarchy, at that time you can manage, okay, how you want to really open up to these implicit access automatically, right? And then when you have access to contacts or opportunities or cases, how you would get access to account, as in that is that's basically going from child to parent level access. So that is also something happens automatically. So you got to figure out, okay, understand how that access is driven. And then because what is going to happen is there could be a scenario, there could be a requirement that, okay, you want access to opportunities or you want access to accounts. You need to understand, okay, that's already happening for you under the hood. So you don't need to devise another solution to manage sharing when it's already taken care for you by the platform. So understanding how that access works is very important. And then I think the community access will touch base later, but the community, how the community user get access to their contacts and their account, there is no need to create sharing set for contacts. right? For that particular user's contact, technically they already have access to the contact. So that's basically implicit sharing. Now, if you look at the explicit sharing, that's where the explicit means you are doing something to make that sharing work. Now, of course, there are public groups, there are queues, there are ownership, which drives those particular sharing. You can build sharing rules, which CBSR and OBSR are short forms to really explain, okay, it's a criteria-based sharing rule or ownership-based sharing rule. That basically you can define that, okay, if this particular user as an owner gets the access, then give access to this particular public group or this particular user as well. That you can basically define under the sharing rules. And then there are assignment rules or territories, basically also opens up access to different records. Then if you look at the account teams, opportunity teams, and case teams, very important to understand which particular out-of-the-box ability will open up access to the different users who are part of that particular team. Account team means you are creating, from sales perspective, you are creating set of people who are part of that particular opportunity or that particular account who are working together. They all need to have read access, or maybe they all need to have write access. Account OWD is actually private. So basically, you open up account access based on a team. Same goes for opportunity. That, okay, this particular opportunity will actually open up access to, this opportunity team will open up access to opportunity itself. So, and I think case team we have mentioned, but I think case team is basically grouping of people. But does it open up access as well, Satya?
Yeah, it works very similar to how account team and opportunity teams work, right? So, I mean, the one thing to note here is like when you're working on a CRM system, it's not like one person owns an account, right? It's usually a group of people who are working on a particular customer, for example, right? And you don't want to go and write rules for every specific customer that if Gaurav and Satya work on XYZ account, give them read access, or because Gaurav is the owner, he should have read and write access, where Satya is just a solution engineer, so give him a read only access, right? You don't want to do that. So imagine when you have thousands and thousands of customers, you can't really, you'll run out of these rules. And what happens when people leave and when they join, right? You want it to be managed in a self-sustaining way. And that's where these account team and opportunity teams come into picture. Now, take one step level ahead, an opportunity. Now, opportunity, in order to win an opportunity, you need to actually contact legal. You need to probably also contact finance, and you may be giving some specific discounts to your customers, right? All of this forms your opportunity team. So if you have an opportunity, and if it's a large scale opportunity, you would have multiple teams across your business who are working on that opportunity to make you win that opportunity, right? And again, same thing. You don't want to go and manually add your legal team every time there is an opportunity that is, let's say, for example, government related, right? Because there may be a government related a legal person in your team, or finance for that matter. You don't want to do that. Like, you basically define an opportunity team, and they automatically then start to get access. And similarly, support as well. Like, for support cases, you may need a specialized expertise about a certain team within your business, and that's where you use the case team feature as well. But one thing to understand is that account, contact, opportunity, and case, these are four special children of the Salesforce platform. They get special access and they get special permissions. So anytime you try and define things around these four objects, keep in mind there are, as Gaurav was mentioning, there are implicit sharing mechanisms already in place for you to use, rather than you going and creating sharing rules and, you know, public groups and those sort of things.
Exactly right. All right, now let's touch base on how this magic works. I think there is a lot of magic happens under the hood, and there are different tables are maintained in Salesforce. So I think object tables, everybody knows that, okay, yes, there is a account object, or contact object or a case object. So that's where your record basically sits. Share records, which have been created. That share record could be Apex-based sharing or could be because of your manual sharing. So there are records which will get inserted or managed in that particular share table. You have access. You can definitely look at exactly how the share table is populated or modified. And then under the hood, there is a group maintenance table, which basically depicts that, okay, based on your public group access or based on your role hierarchy, how the under the hood access is maintained, that all goes into the group maintenance table. Now, why Salesforce does it? Because Salesforce doesn't want to basically for every view of the record or list view or a report or a query, SQL query or API call. Salesforce platform doesn't really calculate sharing for every access. It actually maintains and it basically queries on these all tables and then show you, okay, do you have access based on share table or a group maintenance table to those particular records? Then only you were able to see that record or fetch that record or update that record. So there is an awesome article written here. We have given the link, record level access under the hood. Definitely have a look, go through in detail. If you don't understand, try it out. Try to and see how this actually impacts the sharing. And that opens up exactly how you basically give you a full clarity how this is actually going to work.
And also this paper is really where you would see what's happening behind the scenes, right? And when I read the paper for the first time, this was long back, I did not understand it. It will take you more than one attempt to actually really get your head wrapped around all these share tables and group maintenance tables and how all this sharing is actually done. What are some of the key fields that are used to do the join at runtime? That, as Gaurav was mentioning, this the sharing is actually stored automatic preview. So when you actually change an org wide default on an object, right, you would get a notification saying we are recalculating sharing behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. That is what Salesforce is actually doing. That is actually going and creating all the share records and group maintenance tables for you. That it's an asynchronous process, right? And then you get an email saying, oh, okay, all the sharing has been recalculated for you. This is what is happening behind the scenes. Go through this paper. It's a very elaborate paper. It tells you, gives you a lot of detail. If you have any questions, if you've already read the paper, good on you. If you not have done it, please do it. And if you're listening to this talk, definitely add mention us if there's some clarifications you need on how things work, and we would be happy to clarify that for you. So if you don't understand something on LinkedIn or on YouTube, just add mention us and we'll try and help you clarify some of these things for you.
Yeah, definitely. And see, there is a trick question. Maybe Satya, you might want to give a shot. If I have an object, let's say account plan, custom object, and that is public read-write, what happens to share tables? Will it still have tables and records?
You're testing my CTA knowledge, huh, Gaurav? Look, so the share table is only needed. So public read-write is the most wide access that you can give on an object, right? So you don't really need a share table if everybody in your org can access that that object, right? So the share table is only created for you if your org-wide default is either public read-only or private. For public read-write, there's no share table created.
Exactly right. Exactly. Now we are in quiz mode. Why don't we continue and have a look exactly what's happening?
Okay. All right.
On your toes, Satya.
Let's do it. All right.
So now look at the role hierarchy. I think it's a decent, complex enough role hierarchy with some users sitting at different structure. And now if you look at the account Boston Winter, for example, that is owned by Colin. And can you explain who else will get access to that particular account?
Oh, that's easy. Come on, you need to give me a little harder questions. It's a role hierarchy. It's a tree researcher. Obviously, their manager and their manager's manager. So Frank and Billy should get automatic access. You don't need to So all the accounts that are owned by Colin, Billy and Frank gets automatic access to the to those records. By the way, very good job giving making this the Departed analogy. I can see all the characters are here from The Departed. It's an excellent movie. I love that movie.
Awesome. Cool. Now let's do the next one. How to share all the accounts owned by Colin with Brown. Now Colin is sitting there in the role hierarchy. You want to share with Brown. Do you see any complexity? Do you see how that's going to work?
Yeah, so let's think through this, right? So you're saying all the accounts owned by Colin, who belongs to the role of GTM APAC, you want to share it with Brown, who sits in role under the role hierarchy of sales, is GM of sales, right? There is no implicit way to share this records. You will have to do an explicit sharing for this. There are multiple ways you can do it. Oh, you already gave the answer. I think it's a sharing rule, obviously. Right? It's sharing rule, but which one, right? I think there are two types of sharing rules. There's criteria-based sharing rule and there is owner-based sharing rule. It really depends on are you specifically sharing it with Brown or are you specifically sharing it with the rule? Mm-hmm. I would go with an owner-based sharing rule, saying any accounts that are owned by GTM APAC, just share it with GM Sales. Because that's the kind of relationship is what I'm hearing. But correct. There are more than one ways to share as well. Right? So,
Correct. And see, the key here is that all accounts owned by Colin, that's good enough signal to that it has to be owner-based sharing. Where Colin is basically owner, you want to just share everything with Brown, and it's a specific user. So you got to figure out it's a owner-based sharing rule. Based on this ownership, you share this with this particular user. Now, next is how to share all accounts owned by partners with everybody in sales. So what do you think about that?
So, partners is, okay. So the VP partners. Okay, so share all accounts owned by partners with everybody in sales. Again, this is owner-based sharing rule where you say any account that is owned by that role, VP partner, share it with VP sales. Role and subordinates, I would say.
Correct. So it's like we are saying you're gonna share this with not with one person, but you basically figure out that all accounts owned by VP partners in the role hierarchy, you need to share with everyone in VP sales and everyone sitting in that role hierarchy. So that's roles and subordinate that exactly goes in there.
Correct. All right. So now, whenever we are implementing Salesforce, you see a lot of anti-patterns usually, right? We spoke about this in a little bit. Awkward default is the default level of access that you can define on an object. Now, getting that right is very important. So the general rule of thumb is that every object should be private, right? Private or controlled by parent, given that the parent is private, right? The moment you start defining awkward default as read, public read, write, that means you have opened up access to that object to everybody in your org, whether it's internal or external, right? You don't want that because imagine at this point in moment in time, you want to keep your security model open for everybody. But what if in the future you get a use case where that's no longer true? That becomes a very hard problem to solve. When you keep everything open, then you cannot close it for one particular set of users, right? It's very hard to close down. It's relatively easier to open up. So the best practice is close everything down, make it private. And even if your security model is like open, you want to give read-write access to everybody, write a sharing rule. Write a sharing rule to open up access. Keep your awkward default private, use a sharing rule to open up access. Because that way, you can, if there is a specific use case in the future where certain set of users, let's say you have vendor users who are not part of your organization and you want to give them access, but you don't want to give them access to all records, you can still keep that, eliminated from your role hierarchy and only share certain set of records with those people, But that's how you would manage it. So Plus privacy and compliance. Again, keeping security, privacy, and compliance in mind right from day one when you're doing your Salesforce implementation. That is the key message of this session. Security, privacy, compliance should be the first thing you need to think about when you talk about your Salesforce implementation. And dependent two, modify all data. If I had a penny every time I saw this in customer organization, I would be a very rich man, right? So, well, not a penny. I would say a dollar. But you know, modify all data. This is a superpower. Modify all data. Now, there are two levels where you can give this modify all data. This is at a profile level. So that means you get access to everything, right? Or you could define it at a object level as well. So the one at the top here is at the profile level. That is like, oh my God, you are giving access to everything to that person, right? It's at a profile level. There are certain scenarios where you have to give it. Like if you want to give metadata API access, I think modify all data is a required thing, but you should restrict who gets access to that modify all data. Again, at the account level or sorry, at an object level, you don't want to give modify all permissions to anybody really, except system administrator automatically gets that access. But anyone apart from system admin, you should restrict giving modify all access because this is a security red flag. As a program architect, when I was working with Salesforce, and I used to go and do a security review at customer end, and if I see a modify all, this is definitely a red flag. It's a P0, immediately needs to be fixed.
All right. I think let's jump into now. We talked all about internal sharing, the visibility, the access levels. Now, external user sharing, I think that's where there are also different aspects to really consider. I think very first factor which we look at is, okay, how do we really open up access? I think OWD for internal and external applies, but you need to figure out sometimes that, okay, how do you want to really open up access for the external users when your OWD is completely private. So then the sharing set comes into the picture where you can actually share the child records linked to your accounts and contacts with the external. So you need to have that particular relationship to lookup relationship, and that can drive. You define the sharing set, and then sometimes there could be requirement that, okay, you need to share records owned by external users. Sometimes you will leave ownership of the records with the external users itself. So you need to open up access, like role hierarchy will automatically open up to the owner of that particular external user but sometimes you need to open up access across the organization also. So that's where the sharing groups will come into picture. Account relationships, I think that's basically what we are saying here is you will have ACR account contact relationships, which will also drive your sharing requirements. So you need to understand how the whole ACR based sharing works. That is also available within sharing set. Now, sharing rules, again, there are three types of licenses: CC, which is customer community, CCP, which is customer community plus, PC, which is partner community, and clearly CCP and PC only will have the capability where you will be able to share the records using sharing rules, because that's where the role hierarchy is actually coming into picture, and you will get additional sharing mechanism like sharing rules for these two licenses. Sharing mechanism, again, understanding how the implicit versus explicit sharing will work for external users and how the manual sharing will work for external users. That's also important for the external users. And there will be some scenarios. There could be some scenarios where you might need to open up access for externals where you cannot really share based on the standard capabilities, right? There are complications which sometimes you need to, let's say, time-based sharing. You are opening up access for a custom object record for a week for a partner. How do you do that? You cannot do that with the out-of-the-box capability, right? So you got to have a start date, end date, and have a batch process to basically give access and take out access. So that's where you cannot achieve that with the platform as such. So you got to have the Apex-based sharing in those kind of scenarios. That drives how the sharing for external users will work. Cool.
Yeah, and customer community user sharing mechanisms are very limited. You only get a certain set of features. You don't get an external role hierarchy, or you don't get sharing rules with customer community license, right? So you have to make sure that you use sharing sets and sharing groups in order to expand your visibility of records to your customer community users, right? So, okay, so this customer community users, what we have here is for customer community plus, as Gaurav was mentioning, customer community and partner community only, right? External users, the sharing, the role hierarchy that they get is only up to three levels. Executive, manager, user, right? The role name actually has the account name embedded in it. So defining sharing rules become very, very tricky because it has an account name in it, right? You only get a certain number of sharing rules in your org. And if you have more the number of external partners, then you will blow out your quota of how many sharing rules you can define. So you need a easier way to define your sharing for external users. Super user access gives access to do certain things onto the platform, like delegated administration, very, very important for like partner community, where you have companies who are your partners. And because they are organized, they are B2B relationships, right? They have more than one person who may be managing that hierarchy there. So you don't want, first of all, you don't want the overhead yourself, because who leaves and joins your partner org is none of your business, right? But in order to access Salesforce, they need to have a user account. So you want to delegate that responsibility to their organization rather than yours. Even though it consumes a license, you don't want that additional overhead of managing their users. You want to delegate that. So super user access gives you access to that. But remember, there is only three levels of role hierarchy for external users. You cannot have more than three. And it rolls up to the account owner's role. And it has the account name in the role name itself. As you can see on the right-hand side, if it's the account is Boston Winter, account name, partner user. Boston Winter, partner manager. And Boston Winter partner executive. So only three levels, right? And you can also customize how many roles you want to have. You can choose to have only one role or two roles or up to three roles.
Cool. Quiz time.
Oh, all right. It's your turn, Gaurav. Okay, so we have a similar hierarchy. We are going with the departed characters. But now we've added the Sopranos characters as partners as well. So we have Tony Soprano, Chris and Silvio as part of this external hierarchy, right? So now let's say the opportunity, they're Sopranos is helping you sell some bad things, not bad things, maybe maybe some groceries, or I don't know. Maybe wrong example. They're trying to help you sell something, right? Let's say the opportunity is owned by Silvio. Now, Billy, who is the VP of partners, how does Billy get access to the opportunity?
Yeah, no, I think that's very straightforward. We touched on this particular topic before. We talked about this earlier in terms of internal role hierarchy. Here we are talking external role hierarchy. Silvio technically sits in the role hierarchy of Colin and being the account partner. And then from Colin, technically Billy will get access to records from all users, not only Silvio. Chris and Tony users data also will be available to Billy, being they are the sitting in the role hierarchy. And that's pretty standard behavior.
Yeah. So the logic here is the Sopranos, which is the partner account, is owned by Colin. Colin's role is GTM APAC, and basically it all rolls up to GTM APAC, and then VP Partners, which is what Billy belongs to, we get bad role hierarchy. Okay, next question. How to share opportunities by Sopranos, the entire opportunity. It could be on either by Tony Gris or Silvio with Brown.
Correct. I think key thing to note here is that that the opportunities for that particular account users, Tony Gris or Silvio, needs to be shared in different branch of the role hierarchy, which is going to be shared with GM of sales, Brown. Now, clearly, role hierarchy out of the box will not work. My gut feel is that it should be Apex based sharing. What do you think, Satya?
It is Apex by sharing. That's good. So why did you think it was Apex by sharing, Gaurav? Why not use a sharing rule?
I think the magic or the reason for going directly to Apex by sharing is probably I should have started with the reasoning that Apex by sharing is the account name is going to be part of the role hierarchy for user, manager, and executive. Let's say you have this can be okay for the scenario where you are just opening up access for one partner with another user in the role hierarchy. You can definitely do a simple sharing rule to do one-off solution. But I think if you want to really replicate this model that all accounts, all partners uses their data needs to be shared with different person in this particular role hierarchy, that would lead to definitely can't be achieved with the sharing rules. Sharing rules will see thousands of roles and which you cannot maintain and manage, and you end up having so many sharing rules which are not maintainable. So clearly, if I look at the requirement simply that, okay, only for this partner, If this partner needs to be shared, properly sharing rule. But if we are saying if all the partners, then partner name is coming into the role hierarchy itself, which is going to be too hard to manage from Apex sharing perspective.
Yeah. So scale becomes an issue because you get a certain number of sharing rules. You want to use it wisely. Okay, last question. Correct. How do you share opportunities owned by Colin with the Sopranos?
Right. We touched this particular topic just a little bit on the previous slide. So here we are saying that the internal user opportunities needs to be shared with partners. So I think the simplest is create a sharing set, which is actually going to open up the access for partners. So that's what we explained earlier, that for sharing set, you will define the criteria that, okay, for this particular lookup relationship from account to user or from contact to user, if they matches, you want to open up opportunities or cases or custom object records. So you define that sharing set. In this example, you would want to do the sharing set for opportunities that opens up access to external users.
Exactly right. So Tony, Chris, and Silvio belong to Sopranos. They have an account linkage already. There's a commonality there. Use that to give them access, and sharing sets is a perfect way to do it. All right.
Exactly. Cool. All right. Now let's talk about a bit of anti-patterns around external user sharing. I think we, as we were discussing before, that the OWD being very open, that becomes a very problematic scenario, not only for internal, but also for external. If you have public read, public write, external user access sitting at the OWD, the organization-wide default, that's a big problem because that's a red flag from implementation perspective, because you are just opening access to all external users, right? At the base level, which is something you don't want to do it. Start with restrictive access and open up access on need basis for external particularly. Then if you look at the guest user permissions are too permissive, I think Salesforce has invested a lot in that particular space where previously guest user access was something very, very much open. Now they have restricted automatically, but still while you are doing configurations, there are chances that you by chance, by mistake, open up access to guest users too much. So I think you need to really figure out or clearly open up access for guest users. then I think looking at the, let's say you're customizing your standard UI isn't really something for partner community or for customer community. For logged in users for external use cases, your UI isn't really something up to the mark. You are building some LWCs. That's one of the big problems we also notice nearly in every implementation, where LWCs built for external scenarios, they open up too much access. So you got to really control that, okay, that LWC or the UI layer doesn't open up access to the internal data. And then I think the this is very specific, I would say, something similar to using same user for integration across all integration scenarios or data migration or for anything around. You want to save license cost and basically use same user. Same way, if you try to use one user for community and try to customize everything on the LWC to really give that user experience, but you're actually creating security holes in the implementation, which are actually going to be more problematic and will be too hard to maintain from security and traceability angle. So be very careful in using community users' licenses. Try to stick to the out-of-the-box capability with the sharing settings and try to use the licenses which are really used for or built for.
It's very common scenario, actually, like even when I have seen it, the fourth point is usually what I've seen is sometimes customers try to avoid the community licensing costs and they use a single user and try and provide that level of have one user under the hood and try to implement the security, as you're saying in point number three. Okay. Let's just use a pool of users, like maybe three or four, and then try and manage that. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very bad pattern. It's very common, mainly more common in custom community, custom experience cloud implementations, I would say. Mm-hmm. Usually the reason why I've also seen that happening is folks who actually implement a custom experience cloud are really brand sensitive, right? And they don't really understand the Salesforce platform. They want to have their own brand presence, which is kind of understandable. You can have your own skin on top of the experience cloud, but make sure that you still adhere to the security best practices onto the platform. Use the right licensing model and right security model. You can reskin the community as or experience cloud as the way you want it or experience really, but make sure that the security is as per the best practices onto the platform.
Exactly right. All right, let's talk a little bit around the integration security. I think there are, if we talk about security, it definitely comes on integration level. I think the name credential is very first aspect which you want to really look at. You don't want to customize your integration implementation where you are writing all the URLs and the username password or doing the whole OAuth in Apex. I think name credential are really awesome tool which is available to developers and to architects to design and reuse those particular capabilities. So you want to really use this declarative way to really do the authentication, let it be username password or let it be OAuth or JWT based. It actually takes care of that whole piece for you. So you want to really use that named credentials. Integration user, we were just talking about the same scenario that having a separate integration user to track and audit is really important. We are not saying that you end up having that you create 15 different users for 15 integrations. You might be actually using one middleware. So create one integration user for middleware. You might be doing a data migration. You might want to do the data migration user, which is actually kind of integration user. You might be doing a bit of data extraction for ETL purposes or for data warehouse. You might want to really have a data migration user. So Salesforce gives 5 free integration user licenses to try to use them, have separate user for
that
different
is great.
Use cases.
That,
yeah, so I think
that new feature of having an integration only user was fantastic by Salesforce, I feel. This was a gap. A lot of customers were trying to save on licenses. It came to integration users and it used to create all sorts of problems, right?
Exactly right. So I think next is the integration user should be primarily should be API only user. When we say API only user, you basically keep this particular checkbox on the profile ticked that okay, there is only API level access you are giving, not the UI level access. That basically again trying to give very restrictive access and try to open up access as we need to. And again, I think if we talk about integration,
Yeah, even though it's very obvious that integration users are API only, I think it's a very good security practice because that way you are limiting your exposure to any data issues that may happen through your UI interface, right?
Correct. And I think if you talk about OAuth, right, as in OAuth being the very much industry standard SIG protocol for integrations for really applications to connect, so you really want to use that capability in, let's say, OpenID Connect, or if you are using the completely OAuth with name credential. So those security patterns are really available for you to really use on the platform. So you want to really consider them. Definitely look at OAuth JWT based scenarios, which where it's system to system based integration, where you are integrating, let's say, a middleware with Salesforce. Middleware is actually a system, and Salesforce is another system. You want to really connect both systems with OAuth JWT bearer token flow, so that you don't want to really keep on doing the authorization, let's say, for web server flow. It gives you whole system-to-system integration. Salesforce does it out of the box. It gives all capability from the connected app, and then you can just connect the platforms with this JWT-based integration. The SSL, I think that's very important aspect. We won't go too much in detail how SSL works, but I think a one-way SSL and two-way SSL, probably a pointer we're going to leave it on the session. Have a read, comment on the YouTube or on LinkedIn to share how this actually works, how two-way SSL work, how the handshake works, how why it is important, in which particular scenario for inbound versus outbound SSL actually is going to work. So you've got to think about those edge cases.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I think when it comes to integration, we deep dive into integration, we'll cover all these topics again. But these are overlapping features, right, across security and integration, integration as a domain. So make sure that you understand that the security, application security, integration security, these are all different security features onto the platform. And each one of your use cases needs to understand which one to use, right? Similarly, as you see here, platform encryption. Now, as we all know, there is a feature called Shield, which provides you, it's a package really, it provides you a feature called platform encryption, which allows you to bring your own keys to encrypt your data. Because usually Salesforce encrypts the data at rest, and what this platform encryption actually brings to the table, it actually helps you bring your own keys, right? So think about the scenarios where you want to use these features, but these features are available. Next one is event monitoring. Very, very powerful feature, in my opinion. This is where you actually see what each of your users are doing onto the platform. Are they looking at some records in a suspicious manner? Are there any API events that are happening into your org? So all of the event monitoring allows you to have that monitoring logs, really, where you can analyze what's really happening in your org. It can also help with some of the adoption use cases. For example, you may have some custom UI pages that you have recently implemented. You can look at how many users are actually going to that page and how they're interacting with that page. That will help you with some adoption use cases. Salesforce has released a lot of features over the last few years, like the Security Center and Privacy Center. This really helps you manage a lot of your Salesforce data, retain your data, delete your data, anonymize your data in your Salesforce instance, right? So it's very, very key for you to understand all these features. Login access policies, every now, once and now, you have to give access to your data, to your either your system admins or to you, any app exchange providers or any support functions that may have in your business. And this is a great way to provide delegated access for a certain period of time. So you don't have to never ever reveal your password to anybody. Give time limited access. This should be a no-brainer, by the way. We should have called this out first thing in our never ever give your Salesforce password to anybody. There are ways to give access to your account to other users. Use that. Remote site settings. This is obviously when you're doing integrations, it allows access to external web resources from your Salesforce org. Very, very important setting when it comes to like experience cloud implementations, so on and so forth. And finally, certificate and key management is where you can actually store your certs and your keys that may be used for your SSL communications. It is also used, Salesforce can also be used as an identity provider. This is where you would store your certificates. Gaurav mentioned one-way versus two-way SSL. Maybe there's a hint for you there to where to store your certs. This is the place where you would store your certs in your org.
Awesome. I think let's look at now some of the things which actually we would want to really explore in the context of security. I think there are a few things we touched on the large data volume in one of the scenario, one of the session before. So think of the context of role hierarchy, ROWD implication in terms of large data volume. Let's say you are handling 50 million records. How you want to basically, how that's going to really impact your role hierarchy or ROWD. And when we say 50 million records, seems like very huge number, but I can tell you at the enterprise customer level, that's not a huge number of records. You will see a lot of customers really managing that volume of data. So think of role hierarchy and ROWD implications there. Then I would say, look at the sharing settings in terms of, think of what do you want to really factor in sharing settings when you're trying to load 50 million records in Salesforce. On the day of your production go live, how you want to speed up, how you want to really enhance this upload process. So when you're really talking about 50 million records to be loaded, it's not a few minutes job, it's going to be hours job, but still there are ways to really look at how sharing setting
and then to listeners backup. Yes, and to listeners, if you're listening to this, comment below on the post on what are certain specific sharing settings that you need to keep in mind when you're loading this high volume data. It may not be even be 50 million, it may even be 10 million, it may even be 5 million. There are certain specific sharing settings that you need to be aware of. If you can comment in the post, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. Then data backup. I think you need to really look at when you're really migrating that kind of high volume data, you will definitely see record locking errors coming along through the APIs, through the automation you have done. So what are the different factors to really consider in case of the backup or data in ETL process around that? So something to think of. We are leaving those particular pointers on the table for you to think and maybe share those particular feedback or put some comments around these particular scenarios, and we'll possibly put an individual post for people to really reach out and consider and share their understanding there.
All right, let's close out with some final thoughts. Okay, so security features on Salesforce. It's a very, very flexible platform when it comes to security. You can go very, very granular with your security settings onto the platform. Internal and external security features are different, so keep that in mind. For internal users, there are a lot more features as compared to external users. Even within external users, you need to understand what type of external users you want to support, and then what are some security features for that license. And then, I cannot repeat this more, architect and design your Salesforce with the security and privacy first mindset. This is should be a no-brainer for any architect, but you would be surprised how many times this gets missed that folks don't do it. Keep security as the first thing when you're designing your Salesforce solution, because the adverse effect of that is not pretty. So you don't want to get into that situation just because you forgot to check box something on a profile, right? You don't want that.
Definitely. There are huge implications which will come along. So I think I feel like this is probably our Satya longest session we have done till date.
Is it? It's important. It's a complex topic.
It is complex topic, and I think I just still feel like we haven't gone deep enough. Still, we spent so long time on this particular session. So how important
I think we can do one session on implicit. We can do one session just on implicit sharing, right? We can do one session on integration security. We can do one full 1 hour on Shield, for example, right?
Yes,
So this is a complex topic. Hopefully, this was helpful for everybody listening to this. Please feel free to engage with us as you listen to this. If you have any questions, at mention us. We would be happy to answer any of your questions. Thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you. And until next time.
Thank you, everyone. Speak soon. Bye.
Bye.
So with this amazing conversation, we conclude this episode. And thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. We look forward to bringing more exciting and relevant content in the upcoming episodes.